listening to the New Mamas Podcast. I'm here with Carly Ely, who is a certified pediatric sleep consultant and mom of two. Today, we're going to talk about everything sleep training as it pertains to newborns and infants specifically. Although, since we both have toddlers, we might talk a little bit about toddler sleep. And I'm also looking forward to getting her take on just like being a sleep consultant on Instagram. And I don't know if you're on TikTok, but I feel like there's so much information out there and maybe not. And sometimes the information isn't consistent and there's different trains of thought. And it's just sleep is kind of a controversial topic, even though it really shouldn't be. So Carly, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here and try to demystify sleep training a little bit for everyone.
Yes. Oh my God. So good. So tell us a little bit more about yourself. So we said you're a mom of two. How old are your kiddos?
That's right. Yeah, I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. So very deep in the little kid world right now.
Deep in the little kid world. That's exciting. And you're based, where are you based out of?
I'm in Richmond, Virginia.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm East Coast too. So let's get started with sleep training. Let's get right into it. Sleep training gets a bad reputation.
It does. It really does. I know.
Let's define sleep training.
Sure. Yeah. So the most basic explanation would just be helping your child to learn how to fall asleep independently without relying on any sleep associations that are outside of their control to get them to sleep. So I think a lot of people equate sleep training with the cried out method.
Yep.
So yeah, they picture like hours of leaving your baby alone to cry. And of course, like that does not produce the best feeling for us as parents and especially as moms. Cried out is actually only one method of sleep training. So it can also be called extinction, but there's more than one method. So cried out is literally you put your baby down and you leave them and they cry and they figure it out. They fall asleep eventually and you see them again in the morning. But there's like many different methods. I mean, not too many, but there are a few and there's different variations of them. So extinction is really the least parental involvement, obviously, right? Like you're not involved at all. And then it's kind of a continuum from there. So there's like leave and check methods where you're present for a brief period and then you leave and come back. There's stay in the room methods where you're in the room the whole time until your child falls asleep. And then there's the most gradual, which is where you're basically fading out whatever sleep association they have. So there's really a continuum. And I think that the equation of believing that cry it out is what sleep training is really, I think, where the root of the controversy probably comes from. Mm-hmm. So I really just want to educate and make sure everyone has all the information before jumping to that conclusion.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for that. Because I think a lot of moms, myself included, look at sleep training and see, just automatically think, cry it out, and then say, well, I'm never going to do that. So I guess there's no sleep training for me. So it's like this almost like all or nothing thought process of, well, if I'm not going to do cry it out, then I'm not going to do it at all. And I think what you're saying is that that's not true. And on your blog, you talk about this concept of sleep shaping rather than sleep training. Tell us more about that.
I talk about sleep training, sleep shaping traditionally when referring to newborns. So we can start like really as soon as they're, you know, born, as soon as you come home, to set up solid sleep foundations in a way that's developmentally appropriate. The main difference between the concept, I think, of sleep training and sleep shaping is just comes down to how we respond to wakings and how flexible we are when we're doing that. So for example, when sleep training, we choose a method and we stick with it consistently. Like that's the most important thing when it comes to sleep training, really, is that it's a systematic approach and we're remaining consistent. But with sleep shaping, we're much less rigid. So how we approach it. So it's more that we're introducing the concept of independent sleep so that your newborn can become comfortable in their sleep space and sort of just realize like there is another place to sleep besides mom's arms or whatever, you know? So it's just practicing these skills and knowing that baby will likely still need lots of support. It's not going to work out every single time you try, but that's okay. And basically any time spent in their sleep space, either sleeping or just calm, is a win. So it also involves all the things that I work with families with outside of the actual sleep training method. So it's like sleep hygiene things, setting up good sleep habits, paying attention to wake windows, establishing consistent routines, making sure they're getting adequate nutrition, and then setting up their sleep environment. So the goal being that we're setting them up for success later on, and that sleep training might not actually really ever be necessary. So that's kind of what ended up happening with my second child, is we like set everything up, like once I knew things and did them. And we've never really had to like do any formal sleep training as she got older.
The goal. Okay, no, wait. Let's talk about your first child then, because maybe we were in the same boat. So I know with my first, I mean, I was just honestly clueless and I did almost no research. And I thought that putting him to sleep in a pack and play downstairs in the living room where it was noisy and really bright was a good thing, because then he'll learn how to sleep during noise and light. And what ended up happening was he fell asleep on the boob. I was combo feeding, so I did breastfeeding and bottle feeding. He would fall asleep on the boob. I'd put him down. He'd wake up after 20 minutes, put him back on the boob. And then we start the cycle. And then sometimes I would just sit there for hours on the couch with him sleeping in my arms, and I would just watch reality TV, which was fine for a little bit. But, you know, mama's got to get up and do stuff or eat. And that, and yeah, so that was my first experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Your experience sounds very similar to mine. When you said the eat thing, like I vividly remember like my husband having to like literally like fork feed me like my dinner because I couldn't move. Right. Like,
yep. Relatable.
But yeah. It was very similar to yours. I had no clue. I actually thought I had like a colicky baby. We took him to like GI specialists and stuff. Oh, no. And looking back, I'm like, he was just extremely overtired. Like, I just didn't know what I didn't know at that point. And so with my second, when I was pregnant, like me and my husband both were like, well, we can't do that again. So we gotta, you know, really figure this out. So that's kind of how I ended up where I am. And so passionate about making sure that, like, because this stuff isn't intuitive, right? Like, you're just born knowing that, you know, a newborn can only stay awake for 45 minutes. So it's just stuff that I want to make sure that, like, we can get out there, because I had no clue either.
Yeah. What was like one big or a couple big changes you did with your second when they were a newborn?
Yeah. So like you said, with my first child, I did the same thing where I would like, they're not sleeping anyway, might as well bring them out into the room so I can like watch TV to stay awake or something. So I would sit him and there'd be like just flashing blue lights, you know, and
awful.
I realized like how not helpful that is. So with my daughter, I set up the sleep environment. I made sure that, I mean, she's still room shared with us for the first few months, but I just made sure that from day one, I was putting her down at some points for naps. So like the first nap of the day, typically she'd go down. And then at bedtime, we started a routine really early. That was another big thing that I think was super helpful, because newborns can actually start to detect routines and patterns as early as like 6 weeks. So if you start the like bedtime stuff to kind of cue them that sleep is coming, and start to be really consistent with that from the beginning, that is a game changer, I think.
I love that. So when you talk about setting up their sleep environment, what do you mean? And what is like the ideal sleep environment for a newborn?
There's really only a few components that are most important, which is darkness. So we want it to be super, super dark, like a cave, like you can't see your hand in front of your face. You don't want any little lights just kind of on throughout the night. We want to help distinguish night and day, especially for a newborn. So at night, keeping it super, super dark in the room and only, you know, tiny light if you need to feed or change a diaper. And then during the day, we're doing the opposite. Like we're having naps occur in like, you know, a room with some light, and we're taking them outside as much as we can and just really like stimulating during the day, and kind of nighttime is for sleep. And white noise is a big one too. So consistent white noise, we want it to play all night through both naps and nighttime. So not like 30 minutes and then it shuts off. We want to make sure it's on all the time, and louder than you think. So there is like a gauge. You don't want it to be really above 70 decibels. just for, you know, to prevent hearing damage or anything, but it feels loud to us. So just something to keep in mind. And you can download a decibel reading app and put it in your baby's sleep space so that you know what it sounds like to them. And then also the temperature. So we want to make sure that it's, I like it on the cooler side. I think a lot of new parents are really worried about their baby being cold, right? So you're like putting like socks and hats and stuff. And really that's number one, you know, it aids in the prevention of SIDS. So we want to have it be cool with a fan preferably going, and just on the cooler side. So somewhere between 68 and 72, depending on the season. Think about how you're dressing for sleep and then dress your baby similarly. So if you're not wearing, you know, fleece footed pajamas to bed, like they probably don't need them either.
Yeah. I remember when my son was a newborn being so stressed about how hot or how cold he was. I literally would Google like five times a night, should my newborn wear a hat? Is he too cold? Like, because it was during the summer when he was a newborn. So we had the AC going and I was so stressed about it. I hope to be a little less stressed the second time I go through this. But those were really good tips. And I didn't know that you could download a decibel reader app. That is incredible.
Yeah, it's super helpful if you're like anxious about it. And that way you just know for sure, like it's okay. It's the right level.
I love that. Okay, so we're setting up their sleep environment. And then is it possible? Well, I think you might have touched on this, but I guess this is like kind of the golden question. Is it possible to sleep train a newborn?
Yeah, I mean, there's different schools of thought. Obviously, everyone's going to have their different opinions. There are some people that will say like as early as 6 to 8 weeks, you can sleep train. I think it's more appropriate to do the sleep shaping that I talked about. And there are certainly things you can do that are like basically methods where you're not leaving them alone for any length of time to cry, but you are sort of trying to start setting up like, okay, I'm going to put you down and then I'm going to soothe you, put you down. And then if you cry, I'm going to pick you back up again and soothe you again. And there's certain things you can do, but as far as any of the more traditional methods where you're like leaving and checking, I don't think it's super appropriate before about 4 months. One of the main reasons, honestly, just being that they still need to eat so often that it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to try to like, it's hard to differentiate that. So I'd rather figure out like when they're truly hungry and take it slow from the beginning. And that way you're sort of incrementally stretching the time between their feeds and just taking a very gradual approach from the start. That's why a lot of pediatricians too will say, like most will say like 4 months is when they'll like recommend sleep training. And that's because traditionally when you think of sleep training, the goal really is to eliminate or wean some of the night feeds, if not them all. So if you're not worried about that yet, I don't really think it makes a ton of sense for a newborn.
You talked about soothing our babies. How can moms soothe their babies?
There's a few different ways. The five S's, I'm sure a lot of new mamas have seen when they're looking up for ways to soothe their babies, but it's Dr. Harvey Karp. He developed the five S's. So it is swaddle, side, sway, shush, and suck. You swaddle your baby, which is the biggest one, honestly. And I want to just talk about that quickly. So
yes, please do.
A lot of times I hear like a new mama saying, you know, my baby hates the swaddle. Like he just won't tolerate the swaddle. He breaks out. Me. He freaks out more. Okay. Yeah.
He like didn't want his arms to be constricted. He wanted his arms like out. And I think that didn't help me because you do the thing where they like, you know, they jerk like awake and you're like, what the heck?
That's the whole thing. Like one of the big reasons we do swaddle is because of that moral reflex that they exhibit for a few weeks into newbornhood. So you want to make sure the main thing that I'll say is that there are a very small percentage of babies that don't like the swaddle, but it's a lot fewer than I think people think. So when you're swaddling, the main reason I think a lot of times that they seem like they hate it so much is that it's actually not tight enough around the arms. So it needs to be like super tight. Like, and people will say like, oh, well, I wouldn't want that. Like that looks uncomfortable. I feel like, you know, but they just came out of the womb. It's very cramped in there and they're used to that, you know? And so just making sure that it's super tight around the arms while remaining, you know, loose enough around the hips for mobility. And you're going to swaddle and then turn them to their side. So you want them facing not towards your face. That's a big one. I didn't know when I was a first time mom. I was you know, all up in their face.
Me too.
Right? Like, you're like, it's okay. But actually, you want them to not be looking at you dead in the face just because it is stimulating. So if they're upset, they're already overstimulated. And then by adding in that like extreme closeness to your face and you're like talking to them, it's a little too much. So you want to turn them away onto their side while you're cradling them. And then just the rest, what it sounds like. So you're swaying or jiggling a little bit back and forth. And then you're shushing. So you want to match their cry level with your shushing. So basically, it's going to feel weird at first if they're crying loud. You're going to be like kind of loud as you're shushing. But that's the only way for them to like, you know, hear you over their own crying. So you're getting really close to their ear and you're shushing, and then you're going to offer a pacifier if they take one or if you want to. And then once they're calm, that's when they're really ready for sleep. So you really just, the main thing for soothing a newborn is to not let them get overtired. That's like your main job for the first 4 weeks or 8 weeks. You just want to make sure they're not overtired because it's so hard to put down an overtired baby. You're going to have to calm them down before sleep is even like a possibility.
I've actually never heard of the five S's. So that was really insightful. And you do all five at the same time, basically.
Yeah.
Like this is
pretty much
comes in a package. Okay. Love that. Great tips. You mentioned pediatricians don't typically recommend sleep training until about 4 months. Well, a lot of moms who have gone through this recognize the dreaded 4 month sleep regression. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? Why does that happen?
Yeah, it's actually super interesting to me. So you hear about sleep regressions, right? And how they affect, you know, how, oh my goodness, like they must be going through this regression. They're not sleeping. But the 4 month regression is actually the only regression that directly impacts their sleep patterns. So every other regression is really just a result of developmental milestones that they're approaching, and learning new skills. And it kind of can like mess with their sleep. They're too excited to like sleep. They want to try their new skills out. But the 4 month regression is actually when their sleep cycles change. So they go from a two stage sleep cycle of just quiet sleep and active sleep. So that active sleep, you see like baby like jerking around and like grunting and sometimes even like crying out, but they're asleep. And then that quiet sleep where they're just like, you know, dead to the world. You can take them to a concert and they're like passed out, right? or a restaurant, probably not a concert, but maybe, you never know. But so that's where they start off. And then once they get to between 3 and 5 months, usually like 3.5, 4 months, it totally changes. So they enter more of the type of sleep patterns that we as adults have. So there's more stages and more light stages of sleep. So they're not used to, they're kind of used to being able to connect sleep cycles pretty easily because it's such a deep sleep that they're in. But now they're waking up more fully in between cycles and they don't know how to get themselves back to sleep. And that's typically what we see. And depending on your baby, you know, most babies require some level of support to like figure this whole thing out. It could be as little as like you go over and give them a couple pats and they figure it out. Or it can be what a lot of people experience, which is like just utter like sleep disruption. They're up every hour. They won't go back to sleep. And that's typically like when sleep training is it's a really great time to start that, just because you're basically, like we talked about, you're just teaching them how to fall back asleep without, you know, a ton of different theatrics, right? Like bouncing and rocking and feeding, and you're trying all the things. But this way we can instill in them the ability to do it on their own.
Okay. I love that. Yeah. I feel like my son did go through the 4 month sleep regression, but actually I did. So I did something pretty taboo that I do want to talk about and ask you about. So around that stage, I ended up, and of course, I knew nothing. So I knew 0% of anything. I was one of those moms. Part of the reason why I started this podcast, because I really truly knew nothing. So I started bed sharing because I would nurse to sleep. And then I found that he would just sleep longer and longer stretches if he was in the bed with us. Now, that is not recommended, right, by the American Association of Preventing SIDS, that that is like definitely not a safe sleep practice. But my son's 2.5 and he's still in the bed with us. So anyway, that's not why we're talking about the podcast. But basically, I wanted to ask you, long-winded, what are your thoughts on bed sharing? Because I know that I'm not the only mom that kind of falls into, rather than sleep training, like you just mentioned, mm-hmm. that's a good time. A lot of moms, I think, panic and just find they start to bed share because it becomes the easy way out, but that also leads to other issues.
Yeah. No, and I think it's really interesting too, because you're right. Like it's totally a thing. A lot of moms end up doing it. A lot of families I talk to are like, I'm bed sharing. I didn't mean to, I just am. Yeah. It's the only way they'll sleep. Like I gotta do what you gotta do to survive. Right. Like literally.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting because I feel like almost now it falls into sort of a few different camps. Like you have the people that are anxious about sleep training and then they mm-hmm. end up bed sharing. Like yep. I was the opposite. I was anxious about bed sharing. Ooh. So I like chose the other route, you know, eventually once I, you know,
yeah.
got my head around it. But I think I look at it from a very practical standpoint, honestly. It's one of those things where just because, you know, you're told that it's not safe or it's not as safe, people are still going to do it, right? So it's like, I don't believe in telling people like, just don't do it. And then they're going to do it anyway. And it's even more unsafe because they don't have all the information and they're not prepared. Mm-hmm. So I really look at it from that perspective. And at the end of the day, you're not going to be bed sharing unless there's two reasons, right? There's either because out of desperation or there's because you planned it out. So I think that they're two very different things. I would rather a family make a cognizant decision that beforehand, like we're going to bed share, these are the things we're going to do to put in place to mitigate some of that risk. Because there are things you can do. That it's called the Safe Sleep 7. I don't love that name because it kind of indicates that it's like safe when we know yeah. that the safest is always going to be baby alone on their back in a separate sleep space.
For sure.
But again, like everyone's going to do what they're going to do. I would rather, like I said, just if you're making that decision, then do it out of desperation. And if you're doing it out of desperation, to just know that there are other options and you don't have to resort to that. The other thing is that a lot of times what'll happen is they'll end up in the bed because they're trying to be safe and they're doing room sharing mm-hmm. because that's what we're supposed to do for up to a year, I think they say.
Me.
Yeah. Yep. So you do the room sharing. And like, for me, at least, my son was so unbearably loud while he slept. Okay. Like just grunting and just gas and who knows what. And so I could see like why somebody would be like, oh my gosh, just like, come here. You're, you know, I can't sleep anyway. Might as well just bring you in my bed. And then it's like, again, you started off trying to be safe and then you have, you know, you don't know what it's like until you have the baby there and they're like doing all this stuff. And you're like, just, okay, we'll just bed share. But yeah, I just think everyone is going to make the decision that they need to for their family. I'm also the type of person, like now that my child is old enough where if I want, you know, they safely could sleep in my bed with me, that's amazing. I think that if you like that and you're into that, like go for it. Personally, I just like, I need my space when I sleep. Like I just can't. it's my space, you know, it's like the mm-hmm. only area where I know that no one will be like touching me or, you know, needing stuff. But everybody's different and what their tolerance is for that. So I think it's a personal decision for sure.
Hey everyone, it's your host, Lena Forrestal, taking a quick break from this podcast episode to ask you to support the show. I do this show because I love it. And as a self-funded creator, your support can help me pay for things like podcast hosting and an editor. So here's how you can help. Share this episode with a mom friend, caretaker, or soon-to-be mom friend. Leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you wanted to throw me some coins, you can donate to the show at buymeacoffee.com/newmamaspodcast. Any little bit helps, and I appreciate your support. Finally, give me a follow on Instagram at Lena Forrestal. I love meeting my listeners, so definitely send me a DM and introduce yourself. Now, let's get back to the show. You mentioned the Safe 7. Do you know those off the top of your head that you could share?
Because I don't work with families who bed share, I'm not positive I know them all. But I know that you want, I think it's safer if you're breastfeeding. It's safest after the newborn period. So 4 months or older, I think it is, or I think it's 4 months or older. So not before then. And then there's like, if you like no substances, like don't have a drink and then get into bed. Make sure that there's no loose blankets or bedding or pillows. So just like straight up a sheet, basically like your fitted sheet. I'm trying to think what else. Oh, you can't swaddle them probably because they could just roll super easily. And like on their back, you still want them on their back so that they, you know, their face doesn't get in the mattress. I'm trying to think if there's any others I can remember.
It's like the firmest mattress possible as well. Like,
yes.
I know. So like bed, I did so much research again because I was so anxious and I ended up with, we ended up with our son in bed. We did so much research, and like in other countries, bed sharing was totally normal. And I'm going to put safe in quotation marks because in other countries, they don't have the same like Western type beds that we do. Their beds are typically more firm. There's less very soft pillows and blankets. Yeah, I think that those were like the main things I saw.
And they probably don't use all those like all the products and stuff we do too, like Dock-a-Tots and stuff. Like, that increases the risk. Like, I'd rather you just have baby in bed than like in a Dock-a-Tot also, because that's, you know.
Right. Oh, gosh. I mean, I feel like Dock-a-Tot kind of made the news for that. Like, of do not use the Dock-a-Tot. And wasn't there like a recall or something like that on the Dock-a-Tot?
I think it was like one of the models. But yeah, I mean, but again, we don't know what we don't know. If somebody markets something for sleep, like you're going to think it's for sleep. Listen, I'm a sleep consultant now. And my first, I was so desperate that our, I think it was our neighbors had a baby around the exact same time as us. She was sleeping like 11 hours, like from the jump. Okay. And we're like, what are you doing? Like, our kid doesn't sleep. And they were using a rock and play, and I was like, oh, I heard that that's not safe. And then what did I do 2 months later when this kid wouldn't sleep? We sent the husband to the store, and he bought a rock and play, and that kid slept in a rock and play for probably like 3 months until it was recalled. And you're like, okay, now I gotta figure this out. So you just don't know what you don't know either. Like, you do what you need to do to survive in those early months. And then, you know, it might get better or it might just remain the same, and then it becomes unsustainable. And then you can, there are options for how to deal with it.
Yeah. And that's like something I know that I'm doing, and I think a lot of moms are doing too, is the second time around trying to arm yourself with enough knowledge. Because like right now, my husband and I actually love bed sharing now that my son's a toddler, and it's like a lot more safe than it was when he was an infant. We don't mind. However, we can't have two kids in the bed, right? Like, just practically, like, we have a king size bed, but it's already too small for the three of us plus a dog that makes their way. So that's why I'm like, well, I don't want to bed share with my second, which kind of sounds like bad, because, you know, it's like, oh, I love bed sharing with my first, but I don't want to do it with my second. I'm hoping in my mind that my first will eventually make his way to his own room, so they're both sleeping in their own space. The other thing about having your own sleep space too, like you mentioned, like mom gets really touched out, like really good to have a place just for you, but also like connecting with your partner as well. Like, something that my husband and I really miss is watching TV together in bed, like, you know, a bit more of that connection time. Like, I know being intimate, a lot of people, like my therapist was like, well, if your baby sleeps in the bed, when are you intimate? And I'm like, well, there's other places that you can be intimate. It doesn't have to be in the bed, which can be kind of fun and frisky if you're having to go other places. But I think ideally it would be nice to not bed share. I don't know. Can you tell I'm like internally like conflicted,
battling with it? Totally. I mean, listen, in my like philosophy with all of this is that nothing is a problem until it's a problem, right? Like, it hasn't been a problem, and now you're kind of like starting to look ahead and see like this might not be sustainable for much longer. And that's okay. And it's okay if you do things differently with your second. And it's okay if, you know, your husband and you guys just, you remain in the bed with your child and like you just find other ways to be intimate. It's only a problem until it's a problem. Like, if your husband was like super, like, I, you know, I've heard of like husbands are like resentful about it or something, like, which, like, you know, not for nothing. Like, I can understand that to an extent. I mean, not if they're tactful about it, of course, but, you know, if he's cool with it and you're cool with it, then all is well, you know?
Yeah, I almost wish because I asked my husband multiple times. I'm like, do you want him to have his own room? Like, we can start sleep training. And my husband was the one that was like, no, I kind of like it. It's cute. So in a way, it was almost, I was like, oh, that sucks, because it really didn't motivate me to do anything about bed sharing. But what would you say to those who are skeptical about hiring a sleep consultant? Because like we mentioned, we think of sleep consultants and sleep training as this all or nothing, cry it out thing, mm-hmm. but it's not. So what would you say to those who are skeptical about it?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of reasons why you'd be skeptical. There's the side where it's like, I'm just straight up not down with crying. And I equate this whole thing to basically a cry it out situation, in which case I would just encourage finding someone that like understands that and doesn't use that method, if that method is not aligned with your goals and your philosophies. And also just understand that there are, you know, lots of different components of successful sleep training. So the reason, you know, you hire a sleep consultant is like the reason you hire any other, you know, service provider. So like you hire a personal trainer or a coach of some kind, they, mm-hmm. you know, you can kind of, if you want to, find your own way. But they've oftentimes been in your shoes, first of all, and now have worked with others and seen a lot of stuff. And they can offer you that accountability and reassurance throughout the process. And they're going to streamline that process for you, right? So you're not just like grasping at straws and trying a bunch of stuff and then feeling unsuccessful because you couldn't figure it out. I feel like that's a big thing, at least for me. So I would say, first of all, to somebody that is skeptical, like I have been you. I was skeptical, okay, with my first, like, I followed the Instagram stuff once I started to figure out that we had a problem. I'm like, oh, maybe we shouldn't keep him up for 3 hours. but I thought there was just no way someone could help my baby and that their advice wouldn't make much of a difference. Like how would they possibly know, you know, how to deal with this? If I can't deal with this, I'm the mom. Like, what, that doesn't make any sense. And obviously I'm biased at this point, but depending on who you work with, they can absolutely help. I would, again, just do your research before hiring someone. Does their style align with what you need? What kind of support do they provide? For example, like my style is more on the direct side. I like efficiency, but I also find that it's really important to communicate often and openly throughout the process. So I'm not for you if you want like a super duper gradual method that'll take months to complete. There are those types of consultants. There's really someone for everyone. But also I'm going to work with you to find strategies that feel good for you. I'm not like my way or the highway about it. That's a very collaborative process. And I think just finding someone that you can feel like you can trust, because mm-hmm. at least within my practice, it's a pretty intimate experience. And if you can't have that basic level of feeling comfortable and trusting the guidance of the consultant, then it's going to probably not be super successful. I like to think of, you know, like, would I grab a cup of coffee with this person? Like, do I feel like I could be friends with them? Like if you don't feel comfortable talking to them, then they're probably not the right fit for you, but there's someone for everyone. And even if sleep training, like the sleep training method, isn't your thing, and you know for sure, like, I'm not that worried about, you know, them sleeping like 11 to 12 hours at night, I'm okay with certain like sacrifices within that, as long as I don't have to cry at all. There are sleep consultants for that too. Maybe you've seen some of them on Instagram. They do a lot of like that sleep hygiene stuff, but then they just don't do the any of like the systematic methods that you would do to respond to night wakings and things. So,
related question. It's probably helpful to work with a sleep consultant when there's daycare involved. That was actually one of my questions, because my son, like, I know my son started daycare around 7 months. So how do you keep it consistent? Like, does everything go out the window when you start daycare? Like, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Well, daycare is, I mean, it's definitely tricky. It doesn't go out the window. There are definitely things you can do. I will say babies have a remarkable ability to distinguish between environments. So they can sleep one way at daycare and one way at home. They can sleep one way at nap time and one way at bedtime and nighttime. So, you know, the way that they fall asleep at daycare might be different from what you've been working on at home, but typically they're very adaptable to that. So it's okay to an extent. Like if, for example, my 2.5-year-old goes to daycare, they take that like middle of the day nap. And I know for a fact that they pat her on the back and they sit next to her and soothe her because she comes home. The reason I know is because she comes home and plays with her babies and like pats them. It's I know. That's it's so adorable. My son never did that. So I'm like, oh, girls are so funny. But yeah, so I know that they do that and it doesn't affect her at home. Like she's not asking me to pat her on the back at home. She knows at nap time, we go in our room, we do our routine and we fall asleep independently. And I think that's a big part of it is this routine that you're super just consistent with. It doesn't have to be like a big deal, but you just get into this habit where first we do this, then we do this. I like to have like a phrase that you say or a certain song that you sing or both every time you put them down. So like for us, we sing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. I put her down. I say, night, night, Emma, I love you. And that's what we do. And she acts it out now because she's 2.5, you know? So it clearly it has like imprinted. So for daycare, I would say that's the big thing is like routines at home stay the same. And then when you're first starting daycare, just know that there will be a transition period, like with sleep. It's totally different. If you've been setting up these sleep foundations at home, you know, it's been dark and then pitch you go black. To daycare. Yeah. And then at daycare, like they're like not allowed to turn the lights off for like in some states.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think my state is like that. They can't really have all the lights off. And then if you're sending them to a infant room, right? Like they don't have a scheduled nap time. So they're all taking naps on their own schedule. So like somebody's over here awake and crying or whatever, and then your baby's trying to sleep. So just know it's going to be an adapt, you know, they're going to need to adapt. Typically the first week or two is the hardest, but I like to be armed with sort of, you know, knowing that not to feel afraid to speak your, you know, your goals to the provider and the teachers, like in a nice way, of course, like not in like a, you know, you work for me, but like, just like, hi, like I have this printout for you. I would literally have like a written document to hand them that says like, this is what we're doing. These are the wake windows we adhere to, or this is the schedule we've been trying to follow. I understand that it's not going to be perfect, you know, like exactly what we do. But for example, like if you could try to keep nap, you know, putting them down within like 15 minutes of this time. And then also really important is to tell them like a cap for daytime sleep. So like little babies will sleep maybe like a long time, but there is such a thing as like too much daytime sleep that can affect your nights. So you want to let them know like, okay, wake them up if they've been asleep for this long, or by 4 o'clock, like we need the nap times to be over because they need to get to bed at 7 or whatever the case. And then also asking if you can provide like your own portable white noise machine to have like right next to them. And then if you can, like what the deal is with sleep sacks, like, can I give you a sleep sack? Are you able to put them in the sleep sack? And just, you know, just communicating, like letting them know if one day's weird, like asking what happened, you know? And then also knowing that for the first couple of weeks, especially, like they're probably going to be overtired when you pick them up. Mm-hmm. And that you can either offer them an early bedtime, like that's okay, 6 o'clock on the first night of daycare, like that might be your life. Or you can offer like a little tiny cat nap when you get home, or maybe they'll fall asleep in the car, like that's okay. And then just kind of try to stay close to their normal bedtime, like a 15 to 20 minute nap, and then they can go to sleep like at their normal bedtime most likely.
So helpful. So helpful. So how do you typically work with your clients? Like, how do people find you? How can they reach out to you? And then how do you usually work with people?
Yeah. So in order to work together, there's a three-step process where basically you fill out an intake form. I get to know your child like super in depth and what's going on and what your goals are. And then I let you log your child's sleep and feeding so I can see it before giving you like a plan of action. So then I have all this data and I create a customized plan for you based on temperament, your goals, you know, the age of your child. And then we get together just like, you know, on the phone and we go through the plan and make sure you're comfortable and confident with it. Because at the end of the day, you have to be confident with the plan or else it's not going to work. So that's really important to me that you're feeling like very empowered and comfortable. And then I provide support, daily support for 2 weeks via voice and text messaging. So that's one of the game changers, I think, with families for me is that you can like really just communicate with me almost in real time. You know, you kind of text me what's going on. I'm there for bedtime the first few nights, like, you know, unfailingly there in case anything's weird. And just to make you feel like super empowered and comfortable and answer any questions or things that come up. And we troubleshoot them and just have a lot of communication throughout the process. And then I offer a year of follow-up support as needed. So the reason is that, you know, kids get sick, they have little developmental progressions that can throw things off. And I want to be there to kind of help you nip it in the bud so it doesn't become like a big issue. And so I offer these support calls monthly if you need them for like a 30-minute call. We get on the phone and like kind of restructure, make any changes we need to help you get through it.
That is awesome. And tell us where everyone can find you.
Yeah. So my website is goodnightguide.com. And if you go to goodnightguide.com/nightwakings, I have a free 5-step formula to help you eliminate some of those unnecessary nightwakings. So you can start there and then you can reach out through my website or you can find me on Instagram at @goodnightguide.
Yeah. And your Instagram is so good. You post so many helpful tips and like cute Instagram reels and everything. So you're definitely a good follow. I'm going to check out that free guide. Sounds pretty awesome. And for everyone listening, I will link everything in the show notes so you can reach out to Carly through there or manually search her. Talking about. Carly, thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
Yeah, this was awesome. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening and tune in next week for the next episode. Bye. Thanks for joining us this week on the New Mamas Podcast. This podcast was created to help first-time moms everywhere navigate this new stage of life and talk about the honest and the raw moments in motherhood. I'm your host, Lena Forrestal. I'm a working mom by day and a blogger, photographer, and podcaster by mid-afternoon. And as a first-time mom myself, I'm on this journey with you. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And if you did, be sure to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. You can donate to the show at buymeacoffee.com/newmamaspodcast. Stay in touch by following us on Instagram at newmamaspodcast and Lena Forrestal. Thanks again, and stay tuned next week for the next episode. Bye!